Hello and welcome to Oncology Decoded. Joining me today is Manoj Bhupathi and myself, Ben Garmazy, here to discuss new upcoming data from ASCO. But we only have the abstract title. So what we want to do today is talk about what we're excited to learn more about in the coming month. So we're going to talk about kidney, bladder, and prostate cancer. And we're going to start off in kidney cancer. And I'm going to start off by asking, jumping right into it, Manoj, what makes you excited about kidney cancer after we've seen the abstracts that have been released for the ASCO annual meeting in June 2025?
Thanks, Ben. This usually the GU updates are morally seen in ESMO lately, but this year I think we have some exciting data that's showing up in at ASCO. And in kidney cancer, I think there's two specific abstracts that I'm really interested to see how it goes. One of them is the ALLIANCE trial, which was the PEDIGREE study, right? This was the study that's looking at ipi/nivo and then using cabo, depending on how you respond to the upfront ipi/nivo data. And either you get nivolumab or you get nivo plus cabo afterwards. And we're going to see the results in the step one analysis. So this potentially could be practice changing, but we'll see what that data looks like. The second study that's actually interesting is actually the triplet data, right? The Zanza, nivo, and olatumab trial. So we're looking at an interesting combination with LAG-3. And we'll see how the triplet data looks. Now, this is a phase one study, so it's a phase 1b specifically. So we'll see how it goes. Previously triplets have not really panned out in kidney cancer, so it'll be interesting to see what this looks like, and we'll see if it goes towards more practice changing or if it's going to reassure us that maybe triplets is not the way to go in kidney cancer.
Yeah,
What do
so,
you think?
well, Manoj, just to can you give us some context? What's Zanza? What is relatlimab? In case some of our oncologists don't know what those drugs are.
Yeah, so Zanza, the relatlimab is a LAG-3 inhibitor, and zanzalintinib is another TKI, right? I'm not misspeaking here. So it's basically it should be better tolerated theoretically. So we'll see what it looks like.
Yeah, see, I'm quizzing Manoj because I like that study because I'm on the abstract, so I can't talk about it. Obviously, we'll see the data. We'll dissect it on this podcast after that data. There's actually two abstracts being presented on zanzalintinib, which is a VEGF tyrosine kinase inhibitor from Exelixis at ASCO. One in the developmental therapeutic section, and one in the GU section. So stay tuned for more data on that. I think that's interesting. I agree with you on pedigree. Looking at patients who are on ipilimumab, nivolumab, if they're not having a great response right away, does adding in cabozantinib early make a difference? Whether or not that's practice changing now versus when we need to see further data cuts on this study, I don't know. But I think we're all certainly interested to see what that shows. Kind of been waiting for this for a while. So really excellent work out of the cooperative groups there. I am going to add in a couple of other things that I'm personally interested in as well, right? So you talked about those two studies. I think there's interesting data coming out on HIF inhibition that we'll see. Casdatifan from Arcus with cabozantinib. I'm also on that study, so I'm not going to talk about whether it's positive or negative, but I'm just saying stay tuned and we'll dissect it on this podcast. That is phase one data. However, we know that these HIF inhibitors work in this disease, right, with belzutifan. So we're going to learn about what some of these other HIF inhibitors can do. And then in the main oral, and I am only going to bring it up because it's in the main oral section, we're going to get data from a CD70 CAR T program from Allogene. So that's a solid tumor CAR in RCC. CD70 is expressed in about 70 to 80% of renal cell carcinoma. I know we like to stay on what is practice changing on this podcast, but I think we're all excited to see what a CAR T in renal cell can do. So stay tuned on that. I'm very much anticipating that data as well.
Don't worry, Ben, as you were talking about the HIF inhibition, there is 5-year data that's coming out for VHL with HIF inhibition. So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like as well in kidney cancer.
Oh, good point. Good point.
So what about bladder? What are you thinking?
Yeah,
What's
bladder
exciting you?
cancer. You know what? I'm going to start with the thing that's excited me the most, and it's not a new drug, right? And normally new drugs are the things that excite me the most. I'm talking about renal CAR T, right? But here we are. We're going to talk about further data from Niagara. And why do I like this? So what is Niagara? Niagara is a phase three study, perioperative, looking at cisgem durvalumab, a PD-L1 inhibitor, versus cisgem alone. And now we know that this is has a survival benefit. We've seen this. This is already FDA approved. It's already practice changing. Perioperative cisgem durva, and you also include the durvalumab maintenance in the adjuvant setting as well. So what are they presenting at this conference? They're presenting ctDNA analysis in patients who had the perioperative durvalumab. I think one of the biggest questions is if you have a pathologic complete response, which is about 30-ish, 35%-ish or so in that study, and you have negative ctDNA, is any adjuvant therapy going to be over treatment? So I don't know how they're going to cut this data. I don't know how they're going to show it. I hope that though they can provide us some information is can ctDNA be used to either intensify or de-intensify therapy in our patients? I don't know if that's what we're going to get, but I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that we get the data that can actually help us make decisions in the real world when using this combination. So I'm really excited about that Niagara study. Another study that I'm excited about as well is CheckMate 901, a further data set here. Nivolumab and ipilimumab versus gemcitabine and carboplatin in metastatic urothelial patients that are cis ineligible. So right now, we know that enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab dominate this space. We've seen in other phase two studies that CTLA-4 has questionable benefit in this disease. There are certainly some indications that if you give an increased dose of a CTLA-4 inhibitor, that you can get some responses in urothelial carcinoma. So I want to see what this shows, and I'm excited to see where nivo ipi, how it ends up with the final analysis of this study. I don't expect this to be practice changing, but hopefully it is some kind of information about how this field can move in the future. So how do we build upon the current background of Nectin-4 ADC plus PD-1 inhibition in the future? So excited about that. And then bringing into something that, again, probably not super practice changing, but still a little bit interesting, is the Javelin bladder medley. This is a phase two study. We know the Javelin paradigm. It's kind of an older paradigm at this point. It's sister carbo gem, right? So doublet chemo, and then if doing well, stable disease or response, adding on the avelumab maintenance. That's how we treated patients with metastatic bladder disease until we had EV pembro. Well, now they're looking at if you got chemotherapy doublet and then randomizing to the avelumab monotherapy versus avelumab sacituzumab govitecan. I find this interesting because obviously sacituzumab govitecan lost its FDA approval not too long ago due to the failure of TROPiCS-04 when it went head to head against docetaxel and could not get a statistically significant benefit in that drug. But does SG add here? And the reason I'm excited about that is there a role for SG elsewhere in the treatment landscape in urothelial carcinoma? Or is there a role for other TROP2 inhibitors? Can we see activity against TROP2 as we think about the landscape in the developmental pipeline for certain new therapies coming? So I'm more interested to see where that's going to go. I don't think it's going to be practice changing unless that data blows things out of the water, right? Which I think probably won't. So I think EV pembro is still going to be king of the hill in this space, but I think it'll be interesting data. Manoj, thoughts on those or anything new?
Yeah, so one quick comment about the avelumab-sac data. I think we're going to increase toxicity, and I don't know that we're going to change the survival. We already saw with the avelumab that their survival was about 7 months improved. Now, when you're adding SG, are you really going to change that substantially? I don't know. I guess we'll see what that shows. And the question really becomes, how much toxicity is going to be acceptable? And which patients are you really going to use this combination for? So I think we're going to have more unanswered questions in that space. Your comment on the ctDNA with Niagara is really interesting. I think it'll open up a great option for a community physician, right? A community oncologist to understand how do you use which regimen and which one should you use in the neoadjuvant setting when you use it comparing to like docetaxel or gemcitabine. Now you have something else to follow to help guide therapy. So I think that's going to be interesting if they hit what you're talking about. So we'll see where that goes. What I'm interested about actually is actually a smaller study. I'm actually looking at this, the first results of the SHORO2. So we're looking at neoadjuvant sacituzumab and pembro, and maybe even avoiding cystectomy. Now, this could be a big shift, right? Because we generally think about muscle-invasive bladder cancer as patients getting neoadjuvant chemotherapy, as you're talking about in the Niagara study, and then going to cystectomy. But if we give neoadjuvant Staffy plus pembro, and depending on what their response looks like, avoid cystectomy and give them adjuvant pembro, then what does that actually look like, right? That's life altering. It is a better quality of life. Maybe we'll get better responses. I don't know. So I'm interested to see how that will be applied to in a clinical
So,
situation.
are you more interested in seeing what the past CR rates on that combination are, or are you more interested in seeing amongst those patients who did really well that avoided cystectomy, how did they do? Because when I think about this study, my guess, what we know about this type of asset in combination with immunotherapy with its payload, that the CR rate is probably going to be lower than what we might think with an MMAE-like toxin in combination with immunotherapy, right? So sastuzumab's not an MMAE toxin, right? It's SN38. So I'm kind of holding my breath on the fact that this could be a game-changing neoadjuvant paradigm. I hope I'm wrong. It's better for patients if I'm wrong. So let me be clear. I hope I'm wrong. But I do agree with you that it would be interesting to see if we can collect a little bit more phase two data about how we can do cystectomy sparing approaches. So kudos to the investigation for helping do that. I hope that they focus the analysis in that area. That would be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at pembrolizumab neoadjuvant, it's like what, 20%, right? Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure it was like
It's
20.
higher, actually. It's a little bit higher. In some studies, it's
What
higher.
was it?
I think it's a little bit higher than that in some studies. We've seen in the metastatic setting, combination of PD-1 and SG has response rates in a refractory or in a post-chemo setting of about 35-ish percent. When EV and Pembro basically had double that. So you also looked at DV and Pembro and other MMAE payload combination with PD-1, toripalimab, looking about 70% response rates, and then other HER2 drug that wasn't an MMAE payload with immunotherapy around 35% as well. So I'm holding my breath on whether or not this can be practice changing, especially with EV Pembro coming out probably soon, seeing what that data shows. But I'm excited nonetheless. And I think, again, this goes back to what I was talking about with Javelin. Let's get some data on what SG can do, right? Because now it's failed TROPiCS-04. We're going to get data in the medley approach, in that switch maintenance approach, and we're going to get data in the neoadjuvant setting. And let's hope that there's a way that this drug can still provide benefit to patients, because right now we don't have many tools in our toolbox to fight this disease. And it'd be great if we could get a TROP2 revival at this conference.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where that goes. Finally, in prostate cancer, what are you excited about? For me, I think it's the radioligand stuff that's exciting me the most. I think that's going to be a shift. The fact that we're going to be seeing some newer isotopes is going to be interesting to see what that looks like in competition to what we've already been using. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to most, I think.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, but I'm gonna switch the paradigm here. So I'm gonna go from the phase one CAR T and all those other assets that I like to talk about sometimes, and focus on things that I know a lot less about, right? So there's this abstract that's really exciting in the oral section. It's using multimodal artificial intelligence to see if we can select amongst patients with high risk localized prostate cancer via the STAMPEDE data set, who can benefit from ARPI intensification. So not just the ADT monotherapy, but layering in who's going to benefit from either abiraterone or enzalutamide or apalutamide, or you could even consider darolutamide. How do we intensify therapy for the appropriate subset of patients with curative intent therapy? So I think actually that's really exciting. There's also this phase three combination with a molecule out of Candel Therapeutics. That really wasn't on all of our radars, but it's a phase three study with this new molecule plus radiation versus radiation localized prostate cancer, getting an oral phase three study. And we know from press releases that that data might look good. I'm excited to see what it shows, because this is a molecule that, I'll be honest, kind of slipped under my radar. And I'm interested to see is, can we, one, learn better to intensify patients who are getting, definitive therapy? And two, can we see in a phase three randomized study with a novel therapeutic, can we provide benefit? So a lot to come in that radiation space. I think we'll have to get a radiation oncologist on with us to maybe discuss some of these data if it's positive and potentially practice changing. But honestly, those are probably the two studies I'm most excited about is in prostate cancer. And they're things that I've never given and may never have that opportunity to give, because they sit in a different space than I normally practice. What about you?
I agree with you. I think the AI is actually interesting, right? So it can actually help guide who's going to get the toxicity, who's going to get the benefit of these drugs. I mean, obviously they're quite toxic, right? So if we know that we can better select how we're using them, it'll for sure go a long way. When you talk about patient selection, there's actually a whole section that we didn't talk about in kidney cancer, which is biomarkers, right? There's this whole section on biomarkers and where we're going and what we're looking at and is it real prime time or not. So there's going to be some exciting stuff that's going to be coming about over there as well that we'll be needing to dissect out on this podcast at some point too.
Right, like the NARAPA of data and hormone sensitive prostate cancer, right? So we've seen a lot of data in hormone resistant prostate cancer with talazoparib, olaparib, and other PARP inhibitors, niraparib. Now we're going to see phase three data from hormone sensitive disease in patients with hormone with HRR mutation. So that could be practice changing, right? That could change the game in July for high risk, I mean high volume or high risk metastatic hormone sensitive prostate cancer with a BRCA mutation. So let's see what that shows. Let's hope that's going to be something that might benefit patients. So that's certainly exciting too.
So I guess what we're saying is we are excited about ASCO 2025. We have a lot of new data that's going to be coming out, some of it which is intriguing for us just from a clinician standpoint, and some of it which could be potentially practice changing. Please join us at ASCO if you're able to. Otherwise, we'll look forward to connecting with you afterwards on Oncology Decoded. Follow us on X at Oncology Decoded and email us at podcast@oncologydecoded.com where I'd love to hear your thoughts about your ASCO experience and what you think is practice changing as well.